Hey guys, welcome to Broad Street to Britain, a UK Phillies podcast with me, David Shaw, and of course, Alex Carr. Alex, how are you, buddy?
Hi, Dave. I'm doing great. It's my favorite time of year, and I'm very excited to talk.
Alex is, I can tell you guys, he's not joking because he's been talking about the trade deadline already for about a good 10 minutes before we even hit record. He's chomping at the bit. He's ready to go, and we'll...
Yeah, I'm ready to do it. We'll get that. That was me chomping at the bit.
And of course, Ryan, everybody. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
You know, I'm in a pretty good mood because that wasn't an easy week since we last spoke. And yet, the Phillies have come out of it pretty nicely. There were often times where I was going to bed at times when I was just like grumpy, thinking this is not happening tonight. yep. And waking up quite happy as a British fan. So, yeah, I'm in a good place, Dave.
I'm in a great place too, but I'm keeping my feet on the... I'm learning, guys. I'm keeping my feet on the ground. Oh, but I can't. This is tough for me. This is tough for me because that series against the Orioles was bloody fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I was worried. I think everyone probably felt it. Game three of the Guardians series. And you're sort of thinking, oh my days, especially in the ninth inning when they cough up the lead. And it just feels like one of those series.
Yeah. Kimbrel's first blown save. And then, of course, in game one, he got his first loss as well. And you're just thinking, uh-oh.
I didn't want to lose all three games in the series by one run either. That was my worst fear.
That was the worst part about these last, eight games, nine games? The worst part of this whole thing. This offensive skid, if you will, has just been... all of these games have been winnable. And whether it was one or two managerial bungles, whether it was, you know, the offense just simply not showing up one day, whether it was, you know, whatever it was, one silly little defensive misplay, all of those games were winnable and like easily winnable, even if you just have one hot hitter. Right, it was a one-run difference the majority of the time, and just nobody was converting. And it was really, I mean, it was unfortunate. But now, perspective, 7-6 since the All-Star.
Since the All-Star,
so it's not that bad.
That's the thing I was taking away. You know, it's so frustrating losing these agonizing games on sometimes fundamental baseball. You know, the drop in the outfield between Stopmarsh and Castellanos was just, what are you doing?
And it almost happened again. The day after.
The day after.
Yep. It almost happened again. And Johan Rojas obviously came to save the day, as he does. But... it was crazy.
You know, the Trey Turner errors led to runs, which obviously cost us. And Phil's not scoring with runners in scoring position. If we had converted three of those opportunities, we would have won three of those games. Three extra wins, which, you know, it's fine margin.
And every other wildcard team lost on the days that the Phillies lost as well.
Right.
So, complete missed opportunities. But again, I think especially this previous game, I guess the one prior to yesterday's, the first win against the Orioles in that series, that game to me felt like a real turning of the page and really felt like, we put that behind us, we continue on. Because they were due for a little bit of luck, but they were also due for a win like that, where you just where everything feels lost, and then somehow... so just like the Cardinals wild card series game, right? That was a big turning of the page for them in the postseason, right? This felt like a real turning of the page. And the one thing about this team, while yes, their approaches might be shit sometimes, and yes, sometimes guys are inconsistent, sometimes guys don't convert, but they are gritty. They do not give up. They really don't.
Yeah.
It is never lost. Yeah.
The last the two wins against the Orioles were impressive for their grittiness and for their that was a series you could have got swept in, again, close games. We were close to that. Similarly, we could have swept them because the first game, you know, Harper's out at the plate. That's a close play. I agreed with sending him. It was close. Most of the time he's going to score. That was that pretty odd sort of... I'm not saying Kyle should have caught that in the outfield, but Schwarber defensively sort of showed.
Can't help but feel if it was anybody else, even a routine catch.
It felt like it looked a lot more difficult than it might have done, yeah, is the way. I mean, it wasn't an easy play, don't get me wrong, but it just didn't feel nice to watch.
If I may drop a little nugget in here, Aiden Miller is now 3-for-4 in his professional debut with 2 doubles and a single.
Call him up.
He's ready.
And this, so he lashed one to the opposite field. He singled to the opposite field, and he pulled a ball to the wall. Anyway, I don't want to get anybody too excited.
We don't want to be in the business of getting overexcited, but we're just getting overexcited.
Yeah, he's looking pretty. He's made a couple really nice plays at shortstop too. I'm enjoying my time. I'm enjoying my time watching this man. I really am.
We'll get to a little rookie watch coming up, because obviously it's interesting, and the trade deadline as well. That Orioles team are a really good team. Really good team. You know, they came in with the best record in the AL, still have. You know, they've caught the Rays, who went on this record-breaking charge at the start of the season. And we touched on it in the last pod that we did, that the Orioles have good hitters, but not the best pitching. And the pitching was gettable. And the Phils did. And as Ryan alluded to, the best thing of what and Alex is that the grittiness of this team. The never say die every time the Orioles went ahead, or there was a big blow, you know, like the Austin Hayes tying the game at 4-4 last night, and you thought, I don't believe this. And then Sosa, next inning, bang, back in the lead. And then, and then we got insurance runs, scoring runners in scoring position.
That Edmundo Sosa home run, by the way, I've never seen anything like that, where he almost. The ball just goes foul. He almost hits it out to the opposite field. And then same approach, same pitch. He wallops it again. Opposite field. I mean, he's not a guy with a lot of opposite field power. So I'm like, really, really impressed by his approach there. That was really big and bad for him.
The whole thing felt fun in the stadium because obviously Baltimore's not far away.
Yeah.
And they're doing well. They're doing really well for the first time.
Yeah, their fans are traveling.
Yeah, in a long time. Yep. And I like, as annoying as it is to watch opposition fans jump up in Citizens Bank Park, it's actually what you want.
Especially in Orange.
But it is, as a baseball lover and as a Phillies fan, we would do that in the opposition ballpark. That's what we would expect them to do there. And that it felt like it was starting to get towards playoff-y time.
This is what I alluded to in the podcast we've just gone with John and Tom, is that last year in the playoffs, obviously, when Citizens Park was rocking and really got going, teams wilted. The Braves wilted. Yep. The Padres wilted. And at times this season, when it's really got going, I remember being at the opening weekend, and when it really got going, again, opposing pitchers don't like it. The opposing batters don't like it. And as we get into August, we have a ton of home games coming up. September with Red October on the horizon. The crowd are going to start getting playoff fever again, baby. You know.
Well, and imagine you're an infielder, and there is this this hush during the actual at bat itself. Maybe a low. Dull roar, and then a guy puts the bat to the ball, and the home crowd just starts wailing at you in dangerous decibel levels.
And the Alec Bohm walk-off.
You have got to. The pressure is on. You either win or lose the game in that play. And the guys that they don't have that dog in them, right? They crumble under the pressure at home. For the Phillies, it makes a difference. It really does, and I feel a lot of people don't always put that into account. But
why did we not see Felix Bautista in this?
There was never an opportunity.
But it felt like they were close games, though. Like it felt like, all right, it's not save opportunity. So there were occasions where I might have put him in the game. Like quite frankly,
he had pitched. There was rumor that he was going to get 2 days off because he had pitched, I think, 2 days in a row and 3 out of 4 days in the series prior to this.
Yeah.
So I think there was talk that he was going to get two straight days off. So he was not, neither he or Yennier Cano were available in that first game.
Cano can come on whenever he wants.
I guess they didn't even need him. Shintaro Fujinami just closed that game out, no problem. So sure. What are you going to do? Well, and then, I'm blanking on the lefty's name. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Sino Perez, that's who.
Yes.
Sino Perez, you know, obviously looked like, I don't know, Josh Hader in that game.
Didn't he walk the first guy? I thought we were going to get to
it. He did.
Oh, here we go. This
it was close. Like, it was really close. He walked the first two, I think, and then and then there was the line out double play. That's what happened. So that was unfortunate.
That's another point. How many double plays did we have in this series? Yeah, the defense infield, I hate to say it without Trey, but last night, turning two crucial double plays, the confidence was there.
They turned two on both sides. Let's call it a spade.
We'll get to Trey in just a second. First of all, nice to see Cole Irvin last night, friend of the pod.
Cole Irvin jump scare. Truly, I had no idea he was going to come on.
No, I didn't. Funny. I didn't think we were going to see him this series, but there he was. I thought, my old friend Cole Irvin. Going back, that I think with the crowd, we're going to get going now for the big stretch you've got coming up. The good thing for us is, and I think the one big advantage we also have is that these players went through this last year. They know what to do now. They know in big pressure situations what to do. They can handle it. They've been there already. They know what they're going to get when they're going to Citizens Bank Park, but they know what they're going to get when they get to opposing ballparks in big situations. We went to Atlanta and won. We went to San Diego. We went to St. Louis and won. We went to Houston and, the rest is history, but they're learning from that. And I just feel so confident that with the big home stretch coming up and now it's getting crunch time, another bank, the energy is incredible. That bone walk-off, as we just said, the noise. I posted that tweet of the ballpark cam, and I've played it so many times because the decibel level was through the roof.
But that's the thing too. The fans have been showing up this year. I mean, attendance has been way up.
Sellouts on a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, midsummer.
It's and that's the other thing too. The Orioles fans that were like, "We've made it a sellout tonight," blah blah blah. It's been like sellouts every night game at Citizens Bank Park all year. I don't know why. Orioles fans think they're special and that them traveling made the game sell out. But anyway, I digress. The what's really awesome is that fans are really, they're showing up to whether it's to support them, to boo them, whatever, they're showing up. Right. And that's,
I'm bringing the energy.
Exactly.
Like, nobody for that bone walk off. Nobody had left. That place was packed.
No, still but people like these players.
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils down to. They respect what the players did last season. They see that it's not just free agents that are here for, they've not just signed a bunch of free agents to 2 or 3 year contracts that are here for a quick stop and onto the next place. They have Bryson Stott. Right. They have Alec Bohm.
They have
Aaron Nola. They have players that have either been here for a very long time and people adore, or are very young and have grown here through the minor leagues. And and that has created, in my opinion, this sense that the team belongs to the city again. And that makes a huge difference,
I completely agree. And then that's also, like, you hear with, everybody sings along to Bryson Stott's walk-up song now.
Oh, Bryson Stott. I'm completely sold on this guy. I love the approach. I love his attitude. He's so mature for his age. There's nothing more.
But everybody loves him. Everybody loves him. It's truly, and listen, we do this a lot, but he is a left-handed hitting second. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But he's becoming beloved by this fan base, right? We're not doing that. We're not doing that. Put it away.
Is that what you're referring to?
For anybody,
by the way, Ryan, for those that are listening on the podcast, Ryan has his Chase Utley puppet out.
And it's a horrifying puppet.
I'm sorry, guys.
It doesn't look like Chase Utley. It looks more like Jim Tomey than it looks like Chase Utley. But it really
true, the massive head.
But he's beloved now by the city, and that's very cool.
To add on to Ryan's point there as well, I think the magic of last year in the postseason and seeing the players come together and the players in and the players and the fans coming together as one, because you got a sense of the players were doing it for the fans, and Every home run, they were turning to the fans, giving the fans a come on. They were getting the fans involved as much as possible. And they brought the fan base together with the team to help and believe. And I think, like as Ryan said now, you know, the fans are there for the players because of what we went through last year. And the chemistry is there. You know, the vibes, the good vibes that we keep talking about.
But I think the feel, to take to your point, I agree with everything that's been said. And I agree with the optimism moving forward. I do think that these next three series are very important for the Phillies to just say this wildcard spot is ours.
Yeah, we're
no one else is going to take this from us. And specifically with the Pirates, and I know that the divisional matchup with the Marlins is important. Even if you split that 2-2, you have to win the series against the Pirates and the Royals.
Yep.
You know, they are series that you can't afford to just drop two games
play the way we did against the Guardians, in a minute.
You know.
Because the whole of August is really, really interesting and
really
important. Really, because we should, coming out of August, we need to pull away from that pack.
Yeah.
We're too close. Even the Cubs are starting to get sucked back into the race. You know, they're only five games out and they're on a hot streak.
We're going to talk about that too.
But don't worry about the Cubs.
I'm not worried, but they're getting hot. And if it means us getting Bellinger or, you know, they're going to be less reluctant sellers, I'm not too sure.
Well, if the Angels are buying, the Cubs might as well.
Well, Otani's off the block now, isn't he? Renfro's off the block now. They're turning into buyers as well.
They were never on the block to begin with, according to the Angels. So
I'm gonna tie in our pitches from the Orioles series into possible trade moves and package it all as one here. Sanchez, brilliant. Brilliant again. How unlucky is this man? He hasn't got a win through his name. And he has now filled the hole of the fifth roll starter that it's not really a bullpen game anymore. It's now Christopher Sanchez, the Phillies' fifth starter. Yep. And it's a massive plus for the Phillies. But at the same time, Suarez still, we haven't seen the June Suarez. And now are we seeing what Suarez is going to be for the rest of the season? Or is Suarez going to come back to the June Suarez and the Suarez last year we saw, and now so close to deadline, are the Phillies going to look at this and go, hang on, we may need a 3-4 starter instead of our fifth depth starter? Does it change the Phillies' mind? Walker, one error from Walker, then he settled down again. Walker's getting a bit like Nola. You know, he'll make a couple of bad pitches, one bad inning maybe, and then he settles down, he's fine again. And again last night with Suarez, the third inning, the three-run home run. But then after that, settled down nicely. I was happy with the – overall, again, the pitching was good. Strom, I'm worried about Strom's – you know, I'm so glad Dominguez is back, because Strom, again, like, as we touched on the last pod, is just being used and used and used in the situations that he's not really – wasn't brought here for.
Yeah, I think that as far as the 3 or 4 starter market goes, I don't think you'll be seeing the Phillies shopping there. I think Ranger is a perfectly suitable number 3. And if not, Taijuan Walker can slot in there. But I think either of those guys are perfectly suitable for that role. On top of that, I think that what we, and going a little bit back to this Lucas Giolito thing, what we've seen rental starters price tags look like early here is not encouraging for anyone to want to go out and spend in the rental starter market, because holy moly, that was a haul for the White Sox. And that's not even like Giolito. I saw somebody say that Giolito was like one of the top arms on the market. And that is just objectively not true. Like Jordan Montgomery exists. Eduardo Rodriguez.
Ah, boy, Rodriguez.
Like, well, yeah, but like, you know, these guys, Blake Snell, who is, the Padres would be silly to not trade Blake Snell at this point. But Blake Snell exists, right? There are so many names. I mean, Jose Quintana might be on the market. There's so many names that are just better than Lucas Giolito, particularly when you look at future value based on, you know, what his expected metrics look like right now.
You're not having Quintana above Giolito.
I don't know if I agree with that. He's been really good over the last three years.
You disagree.
But either way, you look at the team and player fit. The Angels are terrible at developing pitching. And you can look at Giolito's underlying metrics and say, yeah, maybe, you know, there's some stuff to be added to the arsenal here. But all in all, it looks like he's declining. And that is, and the Angels suck at helping players not decline. So I hate the fit. I really do. But they're just looking for guys that are going to give them quality starts. But seeing how much they have to give up for a trade package of Reynaldo Lopez, who has been dreadful this year, and Lucas Giolito, who has been very lucky this year, it's horrifying. So I'm not sure if you're the Phillies.
It feels like I'm not. I know what you're saying, but I think one of the problems with the Phillies is not a problem, but there's not like this plethora of arms that are like definitely ready to just jump up from AAA.
There aren't
right
any
now. So you're kind of, that's where the Braves always seem to be trumping us. Frankly, that's where the Marlins are trumping us a little bit in terms of the pitching depth. So it almost feels like the Phillies may have to get a little bit creative to add an arm that's going to help them.
Oh, they're going to add.
That might not be someone at the level of like Giolito. I agree with what you're saying there. But it might be someone. I don't know who that will be. And I don't actually know. I don't know whether it will be a starter and maybe they are a bit concerned with Suarez and they ask him to go back into the bullpen for a short while. Or whether that would be a relief pitcher that they asked to come in. Although I'm not sure. I seem to think that it might be a sort of at least a long reliever or someone that's capable of giving them a big chunk of innings, because that's the sort of arm that it'd be nice to have six arms that were capable of starting is sort of where I'm at with it. They get Dominguez back, and Dominguez that's a huge addition. That's like a bullpen signing this week. That's where I'm at. I don't know the answer. I don't know who the player is, but I think that might be where they're shopping.
I think they will go for a starting pitcher, and I think they might also, because the starting pitcher acquisition might not be as big as they want it to be, because I think they're gonna shop smart. I think they're gonna, you know, I think you're looking more at like a Lance Lynn, Rich Hill acquisition, less so than a like Michael Lorenzen, Eduardo Rodriguez kind of
that Syndergaard last year. Oh, yeah.
But
no, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know where. If I watch Rich Hill, right, that's fine, and I like Rich Hill.
We're going to see him this week.
That's going to be like, that's going to feel like I'm watching Jamie Moyer after he's had like...
that's exactly what it's going to feel like.
After he's had six ciders, is what I was going to say.
Rich Hill, we'll see on Sunday.
He is, listen...
I like Hill, but...
He's not great, but right now, I think what they're looking for is just a guy that's going to give them innings.
That's an interesting point you're making. And there is some upside to him, and he has good stuff. And fine, not like huge upside, but I mean, there is a chance that he could give you more than you pay for him. Over a 2 month period.
I think what they might do instead, because the Syndergaard trade, if I don't know if either of you remember, the Syndergaard trade was something that they didn't think was going to happen. Syndergaard trade was like a last minute, like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Because that's why
the last trade wasn't it?
No.
It was a separate trade.
So Marsh and Ohapi was the first trade that they made with the Angels. And then in a separate trade, it was Mickey Moniak and Yadiel Sanchez that went for Noah Syndergaard. That trade wasn't, you know, the Angels shopped him around a little bit more and then eventually decided, like, okay, Phillies, we'll do that deal. But that's why they went out and acquired David Robertson. They said, if we're not going to be able to upgrade our starting pitching, we might as well just go out and bolster
our bullpen a little bit more.
And it was very smart. It's a move that really
got them. They
can
just go and get David Robertson if they want.
They sure could. But the problem with that, though, is that, you know, again, we're seeing what rentals are going for on this market. And it's like a little bit spooky, and they don't have a Ben Brown this year that kind of is going to get them over the hump there. Because Ben Brown at the time, you know, was easily a top five prospect in the system, but wasn't exactly like a top 100 consensus guy yet. Obviously, he has developed into that, and arguably was that before he left. But, you know, it's just it's hard to say, you know, okay, we will give you Griff McGarry for a rental reliever, when it's like, would we rather just call up Griff McGarry?
This is it. And especially long-term as well. Is Griff going to find himself a regular in this field?
Again,
I'm McCable. And
you look at your future starting death and you're like, okay, well, maybe we want to hang on to it. So it's a hard decision to make, right? But I do think that they eventually settle on some kind of starter, whether it's a starter with minor league options, whether it's a whatever, they'll settle with some kind of starter. And I think if that starter is not to the degree of which they wanted to acquire, like, you know, we've already seen that they have interest in Eduardo Rodriguez. Maybe that's the guy that they want to acquire. But if they have to settle for less than that, maybe then they make a secondary acquisition for the bullpen.
Well, where if they want to go to Rich Hill, why don't they sign Carlos Santana at the same time, which would be pretty smart, to be honest. But I mean, I know that there's history, but he takes walks, he's patient, he's right-handed.
But where does he play is the question.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to think.
No, I understand. It's just
the fan base is going to be so annoyed if we trade for Carlos Santana.
Well, it'll be our TVs off the wall, not the fans.
I think that bridge is burned. I really do. And you know, it's a different regime now than it was. But I'm not sure he'd want to come back here. And
yeah, that's
nah. The bridge is. I don't want it. No.
Yeah. So and you don't want the vibes to be bad. But what I'm trying to say is this is. You are going to have to wait and see with all, there is no way to predict what is going to happen, not only because the market is unsure, but because the Phillies are kind of in a place where they're unsure as well, because they don't exactly have, you know, succinct, like, this is what we need outside of left field.
Right.
And then it's like, well, the best available bats are left-handed, but we really want a right-handed bat. So what are we going to do? It's like, it's difficult. There's no real way to predict it. What there is a way to do is to theorize and you know, come up with different situations.
Yeah, maybe my suggestion doesn't work, but maybe that is I'm sure Dombrowski's trying to get creative. And if there is a club if there's a club that has a sort of starter or long reliever type that also has a right-handed bat that can play a bit of outfield, then maybe that's the sort of trade that he goes for, because he could give up one prospect and get two guys back, or, you know, something like that. And that might be something he's interested in.
Yeah, I wonder how reluctant Dave is to let go of the likes of Abel and Griff, who, like we said,
I don't think he's going to want to let go of Abel, to be honest.
He's not going to.
Well, with Paynes are gone, I wouldn't want to get rid of Abel now.
This is something I've been talking to a lot of people about. But I think the Phillies are going to be pretty reluctant to deal from any of their like top 6 to 8 prospects. I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to want to let go of any of these guys. You know, obviously these top 5 are probably off the docket completely, like down from Andrew Painter to Aiden Miller, like those 5 guys, Justin Crawford, Griff McGarry, McAbel, probably off the table. I mean, obviously Aiden Miller is off the table because he can't be traded, but that is besides the point. Do they want to deal Johan Rojas? Probably not. Do they want to deal, you know, Hao-Yu Lee? Maybe, but he's kind of fallen into the 10 area now. Whereas, like, you know, William Pergola, Carlos De La Cruz, Starlin Cava, Orion Kerkering, well, Weston Wilson's not really a prospect at all. Weston Wilson's 28.
He's 28.
But that top 8, you know, the William Bergolas, the Carlos De La Cruzes, they're not really guys that you want to deal from. Because
if they're dealing that sort of guy, then it probably has to be someone that you get in for more than a few months, unless it's like elite stuff that you're expecting to re-sign. Like, if you want to go and get me Josh Hader, then I'm all, you know, and you want to put Blake Snell in the package as well, then we can start like, but even then, even if you're doing that sort of thing, you're giving up a lot of years of control for potentially only a few months of some production. So,
and if you're looking at Blake Snell and Josh Hader, you're looking at giving up both Griff McGarry and Nick Abel.
I mean, that is
a true all in kind of move. And while I don't think they wouldn't do it, I think that, you know, if this is the time, if Dombrowski assesses and says, okay, this is it, we're going to move in, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But I don't think I would be very comfortable with you know, selling the farm for, you know, an all-out push right now. I don't think that's the kind of thing
but
that
on
I'm
the
looking
flip
at.
Side, this current team isn't far away. You know, we're not, when Casty finds his form again, Bryce is holding up. Yeah, he had a really good series, and I'm getting excited for Bryce Harper, especially with this run of games coming up. I think we're going to see Bryce now really start to come into his own. Trey's going to be Trey. He's going to come back. That already is a massive boost. Having and JT is going to somehow find his way to his 0.6265 average, and you know he's going to start finding a top again. Those four players alone catching form again, it is already a huge boost to the field. Right. That's already extra wins in the bag.
Because
if they were on form in some of those games against the Brewers, Guardians, and even in the first game against Baltimore, we win those series. We sweep the Orioles, you know. So it just, when those guys catch a light, we're really good. And then, you know, and where do we, you know, Rojas, I love Rojas. I don't want him to be traded. I'm really, what he's giving us defensively. And with the bat, he looks really confident. Obviously he's probably going to cool off. Pitchers are going to start to work him out. It's the usual when a player just comes up. But do you really think Rojas could be traded?
Let's call a spade a spade. I've said that three times now, but let's just say it. He is a bit of a redundancy. He is a bit of a redundancy. You know, Christian Pache has no options left and has a very similar skill set. I would take Rojas over Pache any day of the week.
I was going to say, yeah.
But he is a bit of a redundancy, and they don't necessarily have room for him at the major league level. And the way that he has showed out, skipping AAA and, you know, played at the major league level, that probably brings his value up. And listen, if that's the kind of piece that you're going to have to trade to get a real difference maker, especially in a system where you have Justin Crawford, where you have Amarian Boyd, where you have a lot of speedy center fielders, do you say no if somebody says, hey, we'll give you, you know, this really great starting pitcher like Blake Snell if Johan Rojas is the headliner? Do you say no to that?
Would you put him in a package with Bellinger?
I personally, no. I think that first things first, that is too much of a risk. Second thing second, I don't think Bellinger is going to get traded unless the Cubs get an offer that blows them away. They're in a position right now.
I don't think the Cubs are going to sell anymore.
I think they're going to sell Marcus Stroman. I think they're going to sell high on that.
He was bad in his last outing.
He's been bad in his last like six outings. He's been really bad. So his, I think they're just, they're going to sell while they can. But I think that because they can just give him a qualifying offer, Cody Bellinger. They can strap a qualifying offer on him. If they lose him, they get a, you know, they get a pick in the 2024 draft. If they extend him, great, no problem. But he's been good for them and he probably wants to stay there. I don't really see them trading him unless they get an offer that's like, oh yeah, that's worth giving up a compensation pick and also giving up this player that we really like. Like,
well, I don't know.
It's tough though. Like, you know, there's so much limbo. There is so much limbo.
All of a sudden now with Bryce playing at first and being an absolute wizard.
He's been great.
Wow. Yeah. His highlight reel from the first two games against the Guardians was outstanding. He hasn't put a foot wrong yet. You know, he's been, you know, there's a part of me thinking now, oh my God, if this is Bryce Harper at first base, then he's our future first baseman, isn't he? Like,
maybe depends on the early sample size,
I know, but then obviously then it plays. What would we do with Reese? You know, what would happen to Reese if Bryce is just this good at first base?
Go ahead, Ryan.
It's just an interesting one. I mean, a week ago we were talking about maybe trading for a first baseman, and now we're like, oh, we don't need a first baseman. Covered. So I mean, it's kind of like it depends where they feel about how they feel about it, how he feels about it as well. He, you know, he's a real person and he's played baseball all of his life. He may be doing it as a sort of, you need me here, but please don't keep me here. I don't want to do this.
Bryce feels about first base, do we?
No, he just does it to cover.
It doesn't need to be his permanent place that he sticks, right? It does not need to be. He can go back to the outfield next year. His arm's going to be healed. So he does need to stay there. But he's looked good, and it's nice to know that that's something that he can do, particularly if his arm maybe isn't what it used to be when he gets back out there, right? We'll see.
This is all conjecture. Bryce has had now a few injuries in the outfield already in his career with his arm. And I'm nervous with him going back in the outfield, because if he gets injured again, or because
he goes very hard.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Like his swing with the bat, you know, he goes hard with his arm. Yep. And I'm very nervous of him going back in the outfield and getting injured again.
Where, but that's all.
Even this year, I think personally, I'd rather he was DHing. That, like, I, that's
no, I can't. I can't have Schwarber in the outfield.
Yeah, you can't. You can't do it anymore.
I can't.
You can't.
I know, but.
But that's the thing.
I
so,
just mean pre- so from
no, I know, yeah, yeah.
So here's...
none of these are perfect, if that makes sense. Like, I don't really want Harper playing anywhere on the field right now because I don't want him. I want his bat, and I don't want him getting hurt anywhere.
But here's
at the same time, I agree with what you're saying about Kyle.
So yeah, true. What the Phillies could do if they didn't want to go after Cody Bellinger, and this is honestly, especially seeing what yesterday's market value was set at, right? Honestly, I think this is the best idea. I think what the Phillies should probably do is just build an entire bench. I think that they should take in, it's the 2021 Braves approach, right? And there aren't any Jorge Soler's or Adam Duvall's on the market right now. There aren't these really big sellout power kind of guys, right? But there are a lot of guys with really, really good platoon splits. So you can find guys that hit lefties well, hit righties well, and then mishmash them together to be one left fielder. Right. And, you know, depending on, you know, the matchup, you play one guy, start one guy in left field. Then if late in the game you're leading, you can kind of switch around and put Rojas in center field, Marsh in left field, get your good defensive allocation going. You know, but I think that this 2021 Braves approach has something to it. So maybe you go out and you find a Teoscar Hernandez or somebody of that ilk. He's even probably a bit going to be a bit pricier, but it probably isn't going to cost you some, you know, top 10 prospect. He's probably going to cost you more in the like 15 to 30 range. So you go out, you get somebody like Teoscar Hernandez, and maybe you pair him with somebody like Seth Brown of Oakland, who has great numbers outside of the Coliseum and legitimately cannot hit lefties. And maybe you put him in left field some days, and you put Teoscar Hernandez in left field some days. And
yeah, but that's fine, but Teoscar's not played much left field in quite a while. I mean, he's just been out in right field. Like, I don't think his defense is like amazing either.
No, it's not super amazing, but it's, you know, it's better than Kyle Schwarber. And also,
yeah, no, I'm sure. I just don't think he's done much of it. It feels a little, I agree with what you're saying. He's the sort of bat that I want, but it feels like every time I've seen the sort of bat that I want, they play right field. I don't want a right fielder.
It's not that big. To be completely fair, it's not that big of a change to go from right to left. But I see what you're saying. You ideally in left, you just really want a guy with a strong arm. That's like the long and short of it. You just want a guy with a strong arm, and Teoscar has that. So I think that ultimately it's a really hard decision to make, but I think they're probably better off spreading their wealth among a bunch of players than they are kind of just dedicating, you know, one big prospect to Cody Bellinger or two big prospects, who knows. But that to me feels smarter just because.
Yeah, because then you get replacement for Harrison, who, let's be honest, great guy, great for the dress locker room. It's just there's an upgrade there straight away though.
Yeah.
Sosa's come back alive recently, so now it's hard to judge with Sosa. Flip him, stick or twist. You know, stick or twist for Sosa right now. Then you've got Rojas, who's been excellent so far. Stubbsy's obviously a permanent fixture on the bench. It's really interesting. The problem is as well this year compared to last year, it's definitely a seller's market because there's so many teams from the American League and the National League in that wild card race this year. Whereas last year, the Phillies were just fighting, and everyone in the National League were fighting for that last spot. You know,
what I am saying is, and I do think the Phillies will make one big trade. I think that big trade is going to involve Simone Muziati. He is true. They want to spend him like a 5-year-old wants to spend $100. They want to trade him so badly right now because he is blocked in every sense of the word. And there is just no, and he is a top 10 prospect.
There's literally
in the system,
no room for him.
And
whatsoever.
they want to get rid of him. So he's going to be what brings
in. I reckon the Athletics will love him. If there's someone we want on the Athletics, I reckon that guy will get the deal good done.
But that's why I think, again, that's why I think that they have Eduardo Rodriguez in their sights, because Simone Muziati makes good sense for the Tigers.
And sounds like a Tiger to me.
He's not going to be the headliner for a trade like that, but he's definitely going to be a key piece or whatever starting pitcher they want to make. I think that's what they want to do. They want to use their big prospect that, you know, they're kind of putting on the block right now for a big trade. And that's going to be, and the rest of the moves are going to be more marginal, I think, personally. I don't know, but that's what I think.
This time next week, we'll know our roster going into the final stretch of the season, and we will podcast on the deadline day when we could be ecstatic that we've got Bellinger and Rodriguez and Montgomery or Rich Hill and Carlos. Yeah. Which way is he going to go, folks?
But maybe it's a nice little idea if we want to go through and, like, if we had to name, you know, what our ideal or realistic offseason would be, maybe we go through and we just list a couple guys. Do you guys do you have some ideas?
Oh, on the spot, Alex.
I don't know.
Is it in my notes?
Well, this is going to be our trade deadline podcast, right? This is it.
Oh, right.
My ideal.
Pan for me, Ryan.
But there's a different, I mean, you're talking like ideal as in...
I think like within realistic standards.
It makes sense financially, yes, and contract-wise as well. Okay, yeah. Right, okay. Yeah.
If you guys want me to go first, Alex, while you ruminate
you
told bit.
Me on Rodriguez, and he didn't yeah. have a good outing last time, so now his value's back down again.
Well...
But I think it makes sense. I think it's a really, really good fit, but, you know, I'm sold on Bellinger as well.
Yeah, I think the
that's all our prospects kind of knows to, isn't it?
The problem for this is going to be if you want somebody like Eduardo Rodriguez, the Tigers are going to want a deal like what the White Sox just got, and you know that's a top 100 prospect. And granted, they attached a bullpen arm to it to up the value a little bit, but you know they're going to want something really good. And I don't know if Simone Muziati. And then, so like maybe, I don't know, maybe you do something like maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's the deal that Johan Rojas maybe goes in. Maybe,
you know, it better be something good for Rojas.
Something like that. I really think if they are going to deal Rojas, it's going to be for a piece with control. But, you know, maybe the Tigers are just like, yeah, he hasn't been healthy and, you know, and, we don't know if he's going to stay healthy. So maybe that's enough for the Phillies to leverage it down. And they trade Simone Muziati and I don't know, Gabriel Rincon is, I know that we love him here.
Hey, whoa.
Maybe that's like, I looked at my top 30 and I said a name, like, that's just what but like, maybe that's like enough to get it done for them. Maybe, I don't know, but I do think that their biggest acquisition should probably be either somebody like Eduardo Rodriguez, somebody like Jordan Montgomery, somebody like that, somebody that Simone Muziati can be a key piece in that deal, or it should be a bat. But I don't think they'll do both. And I don't know.
I like the depth idea, like, because I think
I do too.
Because Harrison needs an upgrade for someone, a better version of Sosa.
Well, they've got a ton of space. That's the thing. So I think,
yeah, and the space is there. So
and again, I've mentioned this last week as well, but maybe Edmundo Sosa gets some interest. He had a lot of interest in the offseason.
And he's hitting forward
for his
now.
Services. He's doing okay right now. So maybe, and you know, that glove at shortstop is really, it's elite.
Yeah,
I know he hasn't showed it at third base, but he's elite at shortstop. So,
and then we're going to have Pache back pretty soon. They reckon Pache is a couple of weeks away. They reckon he's...
Well,
he's
they don't back. Have a timeline for him yet. So
I'm thinking of Reese is ahead of schedule right now.
Well, he is ahead of schedule, but that's the thing, you know, you never really know. So it's going to be really interesting. I do think that they have a lot of space on this bench to make something happen. They can send Jake Cave back down until rosters expand
in September. Super Cave.
Yes, and obviously he's been amazing, but they can send him back down till rosters expand in September and call him back up then. And all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, you've got three spaces where you can add bats, right? Josh Harrison probably isn't going to last through the deadline. So you got his spot, you got Cave's spot, and then you've got the left field spot that's being vacated by Kyle Schwarber moving to DH. So
yeah,
you've got three spaces you can play
do
with.
I wonder if they would platoon Pache and Rojas.
How do you mean?
Like they would use split those two up in left field.
No.
Are they way too similar?
They are defensive guys right now. I don't think you can count on their bats.
No, that's true. I think we're getting. I think I'm getting caught up in the Rojas hype of just you know, he really has been. He's good.
Yeah, he's been great. And I, you know, I love him. But
if he sustains it, fantastic. Again, another man who stepped right up.
I don't think you want a guy who skips AAA to be a guy that you count on down the line here.
No, you're right. No, you are.
So I think they're probably going to look for, you know, I think that this is how they're going to approach it. I think they're going to look for three bats with certain platoon splits that allow them to mix and match, just like the Atlanta Braves did in 2021. I think that's what they're going to do. And then I think they're going to meaningfully fill the starting pitching hole. And if they don't, they'll meaningfully fill a bullpen space.
I like it. That's 4 minutes padding time we've given you, buddy.
Yeah. Just looking into this in a little bit of detail, there's one guy on Oakland that they could go for, assuming that he's healthy, and that's Ramon Laureano. I think that would make quite a lot of sense.
Got a great arm, has a good glove.
Yeah. And whilst it's not always panned out for him, he does have some power and he does have some speed. He's just struggled to stay healthy.
Splits. I tweeted about him a little while ago. I have his platoon splits right in front of me. So against right-handed pitching, he's hitting 189 with a 261 on base and a 322 slug. It's a 583 OPS in total. He sucks. Against lefties, 271, 307, 458 with a 764 OPS. If you are shielding him against righties and playing him against lefties, he's a great glove, too.
It kind of makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I don't think he's going to be overly expensive. He's arbitration eligible in 2024. They'll probably be interested in some of the guys. I don't think it might not even take Muzzy Odie, to be honest.
No, it's
like, so he's going to be cheap.
Give him us.
I think he'll be, his value has bottomed out totally. He's been terrible. So, he's been busted for steroids twice.
Like, he's been injured as well. Like he's been recently. Hurt. So I think that's something to look at. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on the whole league. Guys get paid absolutely loads to go and fish on these guys, and Alex is better at it than I am. But maybe they could get on the phone to Pittsburgh, not about Rich Hill, but about Johan Oviedo, who's having a little bit of a resurgent season. He's only 25. He's on a very low value contract. They're only paying him about $735,000 this year.
League minimum.
So again,
Who's the guy? Duffy?
Matt Duffy?
Duffy, he's got...
Oh, are you talking about Danny Duffy? Because he's on the Rangers now.
No, Matt Duffy's good at left-handed pitching, isn't he?
He's all right. He doesn't have a lot of power. The guys that I selected were... unfortunately, Ahmed Rosario was also one of these guys I was going to talk about, but he's gone for no value to the Dodgers, which is just crazy. But I had Ramon Laureano. Jurickson Profar has been mashing left-handed pitching this year. He also plays everywhere. He's not good in the outfield, but he's a good guy to, you know, have around to maybe he's your Josh Harrison replacement, as it were. And he's obviously got postseason experience, the whole nine. You know, Tony Kemp was a guy that I was looking at, limited at bats against lefties, but he's got speed. He plays, you know, a decent outfield, and he is mashing lefties this year. For a guy with no power, he's killing left-handed
pitches. He's versatile as well. He can play second base.
You know, so maybe that's the guy you look at.
Philly and Oakland might strike a deal.
They absolutely will, and I think it might be for multiple pieces. I think that there is a good,
Nothing high value though, right?
Like but Seth Brown is also in Oakland. He's a guy like, listen to
Dombrowski loves Kemp? This
and getting. Getting guys out of Oakland is such a big deal because the Coliseum is cavernous. It is cavernous.
But Dombrowski loves shopping in these markets.
The bargain bins.
And the bargain bins. He's you can't say it to Harry Redknapp, but some would say he's a bit of a wheeler dealer. You know,
he is. It's what he does.
That's a great reference.
Another interesting idea too was from Pittsburgh, Connor Joe. He's got a ton of control, but he is also a little bit versatile. He covers the outfield and first base, and he is also mashing lefties this year. So there's a lot of ways that they could go. But what I think is the number one, you know, most important thing to consider is that I don't think they're going to deal unless there is some mystery trade team out there that's willing to part with really good players with a lot of control. I do not think they're going to be dealing from their top 6 to 8 prospects this year.
I'm just triple checking that the trade hasn't dropped already, because we're going to look like mugs if we're talking about it. And it's breaking news. Everyone already knows, and we don't, you know.
I'd let you know. I'd let you know if there was. But it's a strange market and a strange time.
Oh, that was just like we spent 20 minutes talking about Kingery and Weston Wilson. They called up Drew Ellis and Johan Rojas, didn't they?
Yes, of course. Of
Completely course. Wasted 20 minutes of the pod. But this time next week, we will know the roster going into the final stretch. And it's so interesting. And it's like we just discussed here for the last half hour. There's so many ways that Phils can go. I suppose it depends on how Dave's feeling at the time. You know, if he gets out of bed and trade deadline and goes, you know what, F it. Cody, I'm going to get the blower. I can't wait. Big stretch for the Phils coming up.
Yeah.
Not only with trade deadline, but with the schedule as well.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, Marlins, Royals, Nationals, and even Twins at home. All extremely and should be winnable series. August is so interesting. It's like Marlins, Royals, Nationals, Twins, 2 against the Jays and the Nationals again, and a massive series against the Giants. Then the Cardinals, where will they be at that point in August at the end? Then the Angels at home, pretty much all at home. The Phils have only got 3 road trips in the entire month of August. It's a lot of red on my screen. This is the time where the Phils have come out a fantastic series against the Orioles. Momentum hopefully is there again.
Oh, speaking of Carlos Santana, he's going to the Brewers.
Ryan, there
you go. That's the my god, as if watching Rowdy Tellez wasn't bad enough for them at first base this season.
One other thing about August, too. The majority of these teams, Kansas City, Washington, probably not Minnesota, probably not Toronto, but like, you know, St. Louis. These are going to be the downgraded versions, the post-deadline versions of these teams, right? It's they're going to be without a lot of their better players, right? Lane Thomas probably will not be a National by that point. I don't know who. Scott Barlow. Good,
because the Nats are pesky this year. Like the Marlins.
Yeah.
Pesky, aren't they?
But I was going to say the Royals won't have, you know, Scott Barlow. They don't have a lot to trade. That organization's a mess. But, you know, the Cardinals, they won't have Jordan Montgomery. They won't have Jordan Hicks, probably. They won't have Jack Flaherty, right? So it's all the more reason for the Phillies to really go into this, you know, this next 2-3 week stretch and just play some good baseball.
Locked it up.
Oh, they gotta play some good baseball.
All they gotta do is just win series. Just win the blocker series in that August, and then all of a sudden we're not only in the wild card spots, we're top and pulling. We should be pulling away from the likes of the Marlins, the Cubs, who are starting to make a push again, and possibly the Reds, or I think the Giants will be neck and neck with us. That Giants series in the end of August is going to be really good. I think there's going to be a lot riding on that one, but it's
going to be big.
It's exciting. Bumper crowds at Citizens Bank Park. October now starting to get on the horizon with the deadline day. After deadline day, we know the roster. We're getting into the crunch time of summer now. The my favorite time of the year when we're heading to the stretch. Guys, quickly, any final thoughts on this deadline pod?
Is this the deadline pod? Is it? Okay.
It is now.
If this is the deadline.
Maybe we pod. Emergency pod if there's some big.
Yeah, yeah. We've got on standby.
I think the Mets are so worried that they've given Justin Verlander a contract that they never should have given him. The Mets would sell Justin Verlander at a cut price just to be rid of the burden of his 2024 year contract and his 25 vested option, which he only gets if he pitches 140 innings next year. Now, bear with me. The Phillies have a history of 1-2-3 punches. I remember Doc Halliday, Cole Hamels, Roy Oswalt. And they were the days of...
Did you just leave out Cliff Lee?
Cliff Lee, sorry. Yeah,
oh,
sorry,
my God.
So I am at the... Sorry, I said Hamels, I meant Lee. I'm at the point where the Phillies maybe should rekindle The Fire.
I think you are out of your mind if you think the Mets would trade Justin Verlander to the
Phillies. About to say, Ryan,
I think you're out of your mind.
I'm feeling so arrogant about how good the Phillies are and how shit the Mets are that I'm
gonna raid it for Verlander.
I wanna just ring up that Steve Cohen or whatever he calls himself. He's spouting off on Twitter during the he's spouting off on Twitter during the off season, very quiet during the season now that they're absolutely terrible. Nola Wheeler Verlander, that sounds good.
It does sound good. Rolls off the tongue.
That sounds pretty good. That sounds like World Series victory good to me.
No, stop it. That's the second time. If I can't mention us in the World Series, this stops here.
I'm supposed to be the sensible one. I know. That's okay.
I'm trying to keep my feet on the ground this episode. Yeah. Quick ones from me. A big thanks to John Brazier and Tom Burgoyne for coming on the podcast last episode. Great, great tales, great antidotes from the stories with the Fanatic, to the stars they've met, to just everything, the insides of the Phillies, Charlie Manuel stories, just great Red October memories. It's just been great to hear from those two. Great pod. If you haven't checked it out already, it was the last one done on available on podcast and on YouTube, as this will be as well. The 1 minute daily recaps are out now. Thank you for your support on those. They're fun to do while the Phillies are winning. We'll see how they are when we start losing. But right now, they're fun. They're fun to do. What did you just say? Huh?
When we start losing,
we're gonna drop again. Look, it's the Phillies. There's no way we're going through August.
What kind of faithful fan are you?
Hang on a minute. If I stood here and said that we're gonna go through the whole of October winning every series, calm down, Dave. Okay, we're going to win every single series in October, and the Phillies will be a long way.
Well, now you just seem wishy-washy.
We're going to win every series.
Now I can't respect you.
We're going to be top of the wild card, and we'll be 5 games back from the
Braves. Top of the wild card? Not top of their division? Not top of the National League?
5 games back from the Braves going into September, and we play them 4 times in September. It's going to be 2007, folks!
I say this every year. I prefer not winning the division at the moment because it feels I can be more smug when the Phillies do well in the playoffs. It's like the teams that do really well in the regular season, it's great to win the division and win the pennant. Of course it is. But it kind of feels like fun to go let everyone else be smug for 162 games and then just crush them in the playoffs.
And the 3-game wildcard series is the greatest change. I love having a 3-game wildcard series. I think it leaves nothing to chance. The best team always is going to be the winner, right? And it really feels like when they win that wild card series, they deserve to be there, right? Like I really like that.
As we saw last year, it's all about when you hit your stride and when you hit momentum. We don't want to hit our stride now. We don't want to do the Braves and peak too soon. We'll save it for when it matters, as we showed the Braves last year.
Yeah.
And that is a good one to drop it on. Guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. It's been fantastic. Look at that, hour and 12 minutes. It's flown by.
It flew, yeah, truly.
And look, it's dark outside now. I'm hungry. It's been fun. For me, Dave Shaw, it is ring the bell. Who's going to take us out? It was like, Alex!
Ring the bell, Dave.
And Ryan, take us out, buddy.
Sorry to Cliff Lee. Ring the bell.
Yeah, he's listening in Arkansas right now.